This is the Anderson Files on Podclips. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President and Registered Investment Advisor of the Warner Companies, a Foundation Risk Partners Warburg Pincus company. The Warner Companies is a registered investment advisor with securities offered through M Holdings Security Incorporated, member of FINRA and SIPC. And now your host, friend and colleague, Mike Anderson.
Company retirement plans, rules, risks, and how plans are protected. My guests today are Meredith Sesser and Bill Holden. And little background on Meredith. Meredith is amongst the nation's leading authorities on employee benefits law, ERISA, and benefits taxation with 24 years of pension and ERISA experience. She routinely assists businesses and nonprofit organizations in the preparation, implementation, operation, and termination of retirement plans. These include defined benefit and cash balance plans, 401k profit sharing plans, and 403b plans. In addition, Ms. Sesser represents employers in Department of Labor and Internal Revenue Service controversies, including investigations, audits, and voluntary compliance to prevent or correct plan disqualification and fiduciary breaches. Our friend, Bill Holden. Bill is Senior Vice President, Executive Perils for the Liberty Company Insurance Brokers team. He brings over 35 years of commercial lines and product line experience and joined the Liberty Company Insurance Brokers in 2021. Bill brings a wealth of underwriting, brokerage, and client advocacy experience to his clients. I see Bill is also a Colgate University Raider, and Meredith is a fellow UCLA Bruin. Meredith, Bill, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
As we get started on the subject, Meredith, why don't we start with kind of the rule book of retirement plans, and that's ERISA. What could you explain what ERISA is?
Absolutely. First of all, just because you hear the word ERISA, don't get scared. I know it sounds like it's bad or complicated, and it is complicated, but it's actually a very important law. It stands for the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974. And this year, September 2nd, ERISA will be 50 years old. So it's an exciting time for those in the field of ERISA. But let me give you just a brief history of where it came about. In 1963, there was an automaker of the Studebaker, which you may have heard of. And Studebaker had over 10,000 employees there, many who had been there for over 20 years. And most of those employees were offered a pension. But when, after post-World War II, the company declined and shuttered, about 70% of those employees who were promised a pension benefit to retire on got nothing because the company mismanaged the retirement plan and they mismanaged what they expected to give these employees. And some of these people, about 4,000 of them who'd been there for 20 years or so, only got 15 cents for every dollar they expected. And you had 3,000 people getting nothing. So as a result of that huge pension disaster, the government under Gerald Ford said, we need some sort of rules or some sort of laws to protect people and the retirement benefits. They shouldn't be willy-nilly. We say we're going to give you one and then one day decide we're not going to give it and take it away. So ERISA was formed in 1974 to be almost like a manual and a set of rules for companies to offer these retirement plans and to stand by so that if they did try to take away a pension from an employee, there would be penalties. And so that's how ERISA came about, was we needed a set of rules to protect the employees. So under ERISA, what it sets forth is laws to protect the employees and their grievances can be addressed. It also deals with participation and anti-discrimination rules. And so you can't just favor your high earners and not benefit your lower paid people. And it provides fiduciary standards and rules for the plan administrators to act in employees' best interests. And then there's also a set of information disclosures, meaning employers have to give notices. They have to file a Form 5500 to report asset information. And so it's really, ERISA, as complicated as it is, was really a manual put in place so employers couldn't promise these benefits and just take them away the next day. And there were no rules before this. People did whatever they felt like. And so ERISA was something that it's 50 years and we're still trying to understand it. But that is all that I do in my area of law. And we work closely with the government to try to see through it. It's not black and white always, but it is a good set of rules to protect the employees so they get their benefits and also to give the employers a set of rules so they're not discriminatory and they're following the law. So that's ERISA in a nutshell.
And Meredith, has ERISA been amended, added to over these last several decades, over the last 50 years?
Yes, so we get amendments to ERISA, but the core is still there. And a lot of it is, subject to whoever the president is, and maybe there's changes in Congress, we'll make changes to ERISA. We end up with regulations and letter rulings and different forms of content from the IRS to help interpret this and to change it over the years. So it has changed. And, obviously, dollar limits change with inflation, things change. But the concept of you need to protect these employees and the employers need to follow rules has been the same for 50 years. You can't, take an employee's money away if they're entitled to it. There's anti-alienation provisions there.
Would you say, from your perspective, your place as a legal professional practicing this law, helping employers, would you say that ERISA is doing really what it was intended to do?
I do think so. And I think ERISA, with the enforcement of Department of Labor, the IRS, and we also have the PBGC, which is an agency for pension plans, that they help to enforce that through audits, through taking complaints from participants to make sure that the employers are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And there's also litigation in this area as well. So I think with all of that, the core behind ERISA, protecting employees and making employers accountable, is still there and has continued for 50 years.
And Bill, turning to the subject of risks within plans that not only for the employer, for the employees, could you give us a little outline of where administrative errors and omission insurance comes into play for a plan and how that differs and comparing it to what an ERISA bond is?
Well, administrative errors and omissions are really a risk, whereas the ERISA bond is a policy. The ERISA bond is the only mandated insurance by ERISA, and it's designed to protect the assets from theft. The coverage required is 10% of the assets of each plan, subject to a maximum of $500,000 per plan. And a lot of times, companies will add this as part of their crime insurance, or you can actually buy it as a separate coverage. I think it's important to note, Mike, that registered investment advisors such as yourselves or others overseeing ERISA plans as third parties need to buy a separate ERISA bond for their activities for that plan. And that coverage has to be separate than the one that the sponsor organization buys. The administrative errors and omissions coverage is, or administrative E&O is really just a risk. And it's covered either by two vehicles, the employee benefits liability, which is in addition to the general liability coverage, or to the fiduciary liability. An administrative E&O exposure would include things like failure to enroll a person into a plan, whether that is a health plan or a retirement plan, failure to process changes in the plan, failure to terminate an employee or failure to offer COBRA, even failure to enroll a participant's selection or choices correctly or in a timely manner. It can even include a computer glitch, which I think is interesting. For example, a participant opts to move all their assets out of the equities market into a guaranteed interest program or a real estate program, and the computer glitches and the stock market crashes. That could lead to a huge loss. Fiduciary liability also covers not just the administrative E&O, but also discretionary exposures, which is investment results, selection of investment vehicles, disclosure of risks, benchmarking, and other examples. Fiduciaries have become targets even for people on political agendas where they're upset about the investment of companies involved in the Israeli-Palestinian war, things like pollution or other ESG matters. ERISA's Section 410A places personal liability on people considered fiduciaries under the broad definition of that term. And the personal is important because it is really not subject to corporate indemnification. Section 410B, however, does allow for insurance, and that's how both fiduciary liability and administrative E&O, or employee benefits liability, arose. Fiduciary liability policies are available for single employer trusts, multiple employer trusts, like a trade association might make available to their members, or a multi-employer trust, like a labor management collective bargaining plan. The last two are also subject to elimination of recourse. Some companies will buy the employee benefits liability as part of their general liability, but for a modest amount of additional premium, you can upgrade that to the fiduciary liability and cover both the administrative E&O and the discretionary risks.
Bill, thank you. And take just a short break here. You are listening to the Anderson Files on podclips.io. And my guests today are Meredith Sesser and Bill Holden. Meredith, to turn to liability, another area of liability, what fiduciary liability as a plan sponsor, as a retirement plan sponsor, what exists out there? What do they need to be aware of?
So first, I think you have to start with, well, who's a fiduciary? And I get that question a lot. Am I a fiduciary? And a fiduciary is either a person or an entity that has the authority to manage and control the operation and administration of a benefit plan. And as Bill mentioned, it could be a health and welfare or a retirement 401k type of a plan. So some people are fiduciaries and they call me and they didn't even realize it or know it. But if you're, you know, making decisions with regards to a retirement plan, you're likely a fiduciary and you can be personally liable for restoring any losses to a plan or profits that were made through improper use of plan assets. A court can even come in and remove a fiduciary, remove a trustee, or charge them for a breach. And what I like to tell people is ignorance is not a defense in court. You know, if you didn't, just because you didn't know, but you should have known, you still would be liable for some sort of a mistake as a fiduciary. So as of once you know or you are a fiduciary, you're in charge of acting in the best interest of the plan members. You're supposed to show prudence in carrying out your duties. You're supposed to follow the terms of the plan document. You're supposed to limit plan expenses so that they're reasonable, and you're supposed to manage risk by diversifying the plan investments. So it's a huge task to take on to be a fiduciary to a plan. And typically, the breaches will either come up if there's an IRS audit or Department of Labor investigation, or often you may get an employee complaint that something wasn't done right. The most of the fiduciary breaches that I see are in the operation of the plan or not following a plan document. So maybe not enrolling somebody timely, or maybe not making contributions to the plan timely, or calculating them wrong. Those are fiduciary breaches that have to be fixed. And the IRS is aware that those types of breaches happen quite often, unfortunately, and they have a correction manual on how to fix those. In terms of fiduciary breaches with investment losses, those ones sometimes end up in litigation. And so that is when this policy that Bill mentioned plays a huge role, because if your employer is going to need to litigate a claim for a fiduciary breach, this policy would likely kick in and cover the legal fees to hire an attorney to defend the fiduciary what has this kind of a claim. And I think Bill can go through some cases where that policy was very helpful to an employer in case there is a breach.
Bill, and turning to that, with a few examples of where things went wrong, can you give us a case or two and as an example to apply where this liability really has some teeth?
Absolutely. I love the war stories because they make the point very well. In one case, we had a client who hired a super duper salesperson to join their firm. And the company offered a nice 401k plan that would match up to 6% of the employee's contribution. And they enrolled the new sales guy, but for whatever reason, they failed to match his contributions. About 6 months into his tenure, he figured out that he wasn't getting the match and filed a complaint. And unfortunately, or fortunately at the time, the equities market was also performing very well. So his total shortfall was only about $25,000, but it was $25,000 for him. Initially, the carrier wrongfully denied the coverage under the employee benefits liability insurance, claiming that, frankly, it was an ERISA claim and not a administrative E&O. We pushed back, and I was able to successfully argue that it was not a discretionary and not subject to the ERISA discretionary aspects, but rather an administrative E&O because the organization just failed to enroll and do the match. Ultimately, the carrier agreed and reconsidered and covered the contribution. We then went back to the client and said we could have avoided a lot of heartache had we just taken a little extra money and bought the fiduciary liability, which they agreed to do right away. I think there's two other really good claims that I can touch upon. We all remember Enron, and Enron was a particularly difficult risk. We all remember how the vice president blew the whistle on the management and the board over such corporate wrongdoings as round-tripping, unreported debt, misrepresenting revenues, and misrepresenting earnings. And the total damages and settlements in this particular instance were $7.2 billion. At the same time, senior management encouraged all the employees of Enron to buy up as much of their stock and put it in their 401k plans as they possibly could. At the same time, they were dumping the stock because they knew that the whistle was being blown and their wrongdoing was going to come to public. When it did, the stock market punished them and the employees were stuck with huge losses in their 401k plans. The carriers ultimately had to settle the claim just for the fiduciary liability at over $125 million. That was on top of huge losses in employment practices liability and directors and officers liability. Fiduciary liability underwriters have also started to look a lot more closely, and Meredith talked about such things as the responsibility to make sure that the fees and other things are fair. They want to make sure as underwriters that companies are offering other vehicles than just investing in the own stock and that they're explaining the risks associated with the various investment vehicles. And they're also watching for excessive fee claims, which allege that beneficiaries are paying plan administrators, mutual fund administrators, record keepers, and others too much for the results on their various investment vehicles. These can attack also the benchmarking as a result of how the results are compared against their own plan or other plans. these have surged in the last 5 years. And one of the things, because they're kind of cookie cutter claims, they tend to go downstream after smaller funds than they used to. So those claims cause a lot of heartburn for the various carriers. The last one is, I think, an interesting case. This was a Midwest construction company back in the 1980s. It was looking for ways to improve their results by cutting expenses. The board hit upon an idea that when an employee would get close to retirement age, they would fire that employee or terminate the employment and cut back on the retirement benefits paid under the defined benefits plan. The scheme was called by the board Ringing the Bell, and Bell was an acronym in reverse that meant let's lose employee benefits. The board, even in the minutes, would ask, how are we doing about ringing the bell? When the pattern in the plan scheme was discovered, both the fiduciary liability and the directors and officers liability policies were triggered because of claims filed by interested parties, including those former employees who were terminated under the scheme. In the 1980s dollars, the courts awarded over $70 million in damages, which, given judicial inflation, would probably be high nine figures, if not over $1 billion. And they talked about how they breached their fiduciary duties under the retirement plans and corporately, including various business judgment rules like the duties of obedience, diligence, and loyalty. They failed to act like a reasonable and prudent person in a like and similar circumstance would act. And they put their own interests ahead of those of the participants and the other investors. Fiduciary liability is really designed to protect the fiduciaries, the directors, the officers, the employees, the administrators, all the people that Meredith is talking about, who ERISA defines as fiduciaries, from the personal liabilities and exposures that they can accrue in trying to do the right thing. It can cover the defense costs and it can cover the damages. And I think it's a really important part of a company's risk management.
Yeah, Bill, absolutely. Absolutely. Meredith, to discuss an example of investment loss, do you have a case that you can share with us and as we wrap up?
Yes, I have cases where the employer sponsor is sued by a participant. And I had one where a participant left their money in the plan many years after they terminated employment, which people do because the investment fees are usually cheaper and the investments are very broad. And so they leave the money in the plan. But unfortunately, if you don't take it when the assets are up and the market's up, you can't come back and say, well, wait, I meant to take it as of last year, but I just forgot to turn in the form. And in this case, the assets were up and the valuation is every December 31st. So as of 12/31, the assets were X and the employee, former employee, did not submit a form. The assets dropped in January and February of the next year. And he said, I want my assets, but I want them based on 2 years ago valuation, which when it was higher. And unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. But the employer still needs to defend, even though we wrote several letters. He hired a lawyer and the employer needed to defend it, in which case that insurance policy that Bill talked about kicked in and paid for the legal fees. I don't know that there's any damages here if the employer wins, but at least they didn't have to pay the lawyers to defend the claim. And these claims do happen when an employee thinks they're right. They want that higher payout when the market's up, like all of us. But unfortunately, an employer has to follow the rules of the plan and can't make up the rules. So I strongly recommend to my clients to get this extra policy, albeit it's not a requirement, just because you never know what's going to happen. And for the small premium, it could turn out to be a huge win later on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So employers, trustees, administrators, internal to the company, employees, beware. This is the operation, administration of a retirement plan. There are key rules that need to be followed and processes. And as Meredith and Bill have described, very effective ways to protect everyone and to manage the risks and follow the rules. As we wrap up, Meredith, Bill, what is the easiest way for our listeners to reach you? Meredith, do you want to go first?
For me, you can come to my website, www.cessorlaw.com.
The easiest way to reach me is probably by email. My email address is bholden@libertycompany.com.
Meredith, Bill, thanks so much for the time today and sharing this very important subject for employers, for employees, and listeners. We know that there's going to be business owners out there listening, gatekeepers, attorneys, finance people, plan administrators. Take heed, because everything that they're sharing is very, very real. And by following what's detailed here, you're going to have a wonderful plan and keep it in good stead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Anderson Files on podclips.io. Want to thank Daryl Wayne, our recording engineer. Want to thank our producer, Mark Allen. I'm Mike Anderson. And you're listening to The Anderson Files on podclips.io. Keep calm and keep listening.
You've been listening to The Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclips.io and check on the financial channel for more episodes and information on The Anderson Files.